Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Journal Republican, reading stories dated November 12th through November 18th, 2020. We'll start with the article headlined Setbacks in Wind Ordinance Approved by Steve Hoffman, November 18th. The Piatt County Board last week approved changes in its large wind energy conservation ordinance, endorsing Zoning Board of Appeals recommendations when it comes to setbacks. Setbacks are now 1.3 times the tower tip height to the nearest primary structure, or 1,600 feet, whichever is greater. The same ratio was approved for setbacks from towers to adjacent property lines, or 1,000 feet, whichever is greater. The approval increases the setback ratio from 1.1 to 1.3 times the tower tip height, but keeps it well under a ratio of 3.75 that had been considered at times over the past year. I'd like to really thank the county board, the zoning board, as well as the county staff for their work and leadership on the WEC ordinance and amendment review process, said Alan Moore of Apex Clean Energy, which has announced plans for a wind development in northern Piatt County. I'd also like to thank the three outgoing board members for their leadership and service of Piatt County over the last number of years, and also congratulate the incoming county board members. We're excited to continue our work towards a safe and sustainable renewable energy project in Piatt County, he added. The November 11th session was the last regular county board meeting for Dale Lotz, Renee Frunt, and Bob Murrell. They will be replaced by Jerry Edwards, Gail Jones, and Todd Hendricks. Murrell was the only no vote in regards to the wind turbine setback change, saying he is against wind farms in general for the county. I'm still totally opposed to wind farms coming into Piatt County and taking up A1 farmland, so every time something comes up, I will vote no to protect the farmland, said Murrell. The Zoning Board is taking on WEC text amendments in chunks. With setbacks complete, next up are possible sound and noise changes, which will be discussed at this Thursday's November 19th Zoning Board of Appeals meeting, which begins at 1 p.m. It will be held in the county courthouse, but will also be available remotely via Zoom. County Board Chairman Ray Spencer thanked the ZBA for its work. I appreciate the work of the ZBA. They're doing the heavy lifting on this, he said. County Board Member Randy Schumard agreed. I'm confident that the Zoning Board has thoroughly researched this, commented Schumard. State issues stricter mitigations amid hospitalization surge, by Jerry Nowicki, Capital News, Illinois. Casinos, gaming terminals to close, capacity limits to take effect. Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker announced the entire state would enter Tier 3 of his mitigation plan starting Friday, as he noted the best way for Illinoisans to avoid another stay-at-home order was by staying home. Tier 3 boils down to this. If you don't need to do it, don't. Governor J.B. Pritzker said of leaving the home as COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations continue to soar. Pritzker, at his daily briefing, said the Tier 3 mitigations stop short of a stay-at-home order, although staying home was the best option for limiting the virus's spread. More businesses are allowed to remain open than when he issued a stay-at-home order in March, because more is known about the virus, he said. The announcement that certain businesses, including casinos and indoor gaming terminals, would come close came as the Illinois Department of Public Health reported another 12,601 new confirmed and probable cases of COVID-19 and 97 virus-related deaths Thursday. The Tier 3 mitigations also call for limiting home gatherings to household members and banning gatherings at meeting rooms, banquet centers, private party rooms, private clubs, and country clubs. Funerals are limited to 10 family members of the deceased person. To be very clear, we are relying on you here, Pritzker said. Nobody will go door to door to check on you, but we're asking people to hold themselves and each other accountable. The mitigations are needed, according to the governor and IDPH director, Dr. Ngozi Eziki, because hospitalizations are hitting a point of exponential growth, meaning the rate of increase is growing faster. Mitigations will be in place until numbers start to decrease significantly, the governor said. Hospitalizations pushed past new highs again at the end of Monday, with 5,887 hospital beds in use by COVID-19 patients, an increase of 306 from the day before. It's the 23rd straight day of increases. In Region 7 of the state's mitigation plan, made up of Will and Kankakee counties, only 12% of hospital, medical, and surgical beds and 16% of intensive care unit beds remained available at the end of Monday. Statewide, intensive care bed usage for COVID-19 increased by 14, with 1,158 beds in use at the end of Monday, pulling within 140 of the record set during the first wave. The number has increased for 12 straight days. Ventilator usage increased by 31 to 545. In hospitals throughout the state, one out of every four patients has COVID, and that number is only going to grow, Eziki said. So if those COVID numbers grow and flu hospitalizations will grow, where will someone go with chest pain? Where would they go if they acutely notice facial droop after a car accident? We have to be able to take care of all of the people of Illinois and have the hospital capacity to do so. The virus spreads through respiratory droplets and when people are in close contact with one another, so the new mitigations are aimed at keeping people further apart from one another, she said. Right now, this virus has backed us into a corner, she said, and we are left making insanely difficult and weighty decisions. We all want to get back to normal, but we can't get there just yet. I urge people to turn their frustration and their anger into something positive. Instead of trying to buck the mitigations, can we all just follow them, acknowledging that these are what are needed to get back to some semblance of normal? Health and fitness centers will be allowed to operate at 25% capacity, as long as all patrons wear a face covering and reservations will be required. Indoor classes will not be allowed, and locker rooms will be required to close. The guidance also calls for a pause of all indoor group sporting and recreational activities, including youth and adult recreational sports, while Tier 3 mitigations are in place. This includes park districts and travel leagues. Outdoor sports and recreation are allowed, but participant groups and practices outdoors will be limited to 10 people or less, and social distancing is required, along with face coverings. Non-essential retail facilities will be allowed to operate at 25% capacity, while pharmacies and grocery stores may operate at 50% capacity. Personal care services must operate at the lesser of 25 clients or 25% of capacity, but can remain open as long as everyone wears a face covering throughout the appointment. Indoor service will continue to be banned at bars and restaurants, which will no longer be allowed to operate gaming terminals. The businesses must close by 11 p.m., and table sizes cannot exceed 6 people. The tier also closes indoor recreation centers, such as theaters, performing arts centers, and indoor museums and amusement centers. Outdoor activities are allowed at 25% of capacity or less, with outdoor group activities limited to 10 people or less, with face coverings and reservations required. Manufacturing facilities may remain open with several safety and risk guidelines and contact tracing procedures in place. Some state House Republicans earlier in the day called for the governor to convene a special session for lawmakers to give input on mitigation plans. Democratic leaders in the General Assembly called off a planned November veto session. And when lawmakers last met in May, they decided not to pass measures allowing lawmakers to meet and vote remotely after strong Republican opposition. Asked about including the General Assembly Tuesday, Pritzker said he has had discussion after discussion with individual members of the Republican caucuses. and taken into account their suggestions on a number of industries in consultations with doctors. And so, again, what the doctors are trying to do is measure the risk and then take action based upon how we can limit risk, but still keep things going, he said. The state's rolling 7-day average case positivity rate sat at 12.7% Tuesday, a slight increase from Monday, but a half point lower than Friday. Of the state's 11 COVID-19 mitigation regions, 10 had positivity rates remain the same or decrease slightly from the day prior as of November 14th, the latest data available. Region 7 in Will and Kankakee counties saw its rate increase to 20.3% to top all regions, while Region 5 in Southern Illinois was the lowest at 13.9%. Sheriff to serve as interim EMA director by Steve Hoffman, November 17th. County Board also approves 2020-21 budget. Piatt County Sheriff David Hunt is adding interim emergency management agency director duties to his plate after action by the County Board on November 12th. The board unanimously approved hiring Hunt to the interim post, paying him $1,333 per month, which is the budgeted amount for 2020-21, as the position shifts back to part-time. Hunt is filling in for Mike Holmes, who was hired in 2018 and has been on sick leave since September 30th. We're very fortunate that Sheriff Hunt has agreed to step in here short-term to fill that void, said County Board member Shannon Carroll. The sheriff said his main emphasis would be to get paperwork filed to keep the EMA's accreditation, which is needed to be eligible for state and federal grants. This is not grant paperwork. It's basically accreditation paperwork to qualify for grants. That needs to be done first. Thanks for stepping up, stated County Board Chairman Ray Spencer. The Emergency Management Committee has been discussing the possibility of an interim for the past month. The County Emergency Operations Plan lists the County Board Chairman and his or her designee as next in line to take over EMA duties when needed. Budget, levy approved. The board approved its budget for 2020-21, the same as the tentative one that had been passed on October 28th. It is a balanced document for the main general fund, about a $10,000 surplus, that relies on a new $250,000 tort levy and a $50,000 funding cut in the health department to help projected revenue meet expenses. In all, it anticipates $5,480,021 in revenue and $5,469,790 in expenses. The budget was approved 5-1, with Bob Merle voting no. "I have many concerns over it," said Merle, who felt that zeroing out some line items such as equipment and travel across the board, along with a nearly $300,000 cut in buildings and grounds, was unrealistic. "There's no transportation for any department, including the coroner? The coroner's not going to travel to get any bodies? The budget is artificial. Just because they left the columns blank, it looks like we'll save that much money." "It doesn't," said Merle. "The bottom line looks like it is good. But it's untrue." "What's the alternative instead of passing this budget?" County Board Member Randy Schumard asked Merle in response. Other board members lauded the work of budget consultant Bellwether, which led the county through the budgeting process without projecting staff cuts. The 2019-20 budget was $386,000 in the red and trimmed the number of employees in the county, mostly in the sheriff's department. "I would comment that Bellwether was very good in this process, and their knowledge of budgets in general, not just our county, but other counties, was a big step forward for Piatt County," said Carroll. The board also approved its tax levy 5-1, which is 4.9% more than last year. Spencer said the increase is needed, which is less than the 9% approved last year. "Everybody's expenses are going up, even the county's. We have bills to pay. I think the taxpayers would expect us to pay our bills, so I don't think it's burdensome," he said. Piatran cash flow. Despite a funding crunch, the board seemed willing to help Piatt County Transportation keep its buses rolling while it waits on a $386,000 the state owes them. The county loaned Piatran $100,000 last month to help meet payroll. And Director Jamie Tribum said another $15,000 may be needed if state reimbursements are not received by the end of the month. Spencer said the county could help if needed while Piatran waits on its state funding. "I don't want to lose those services," said Spencer. Tribum hopes the dollars will arrive in the next 2 weeks. If not, the county board may call a special meeting to add to the existing $100,000 loan. The Piatran director said she'd been working on the issue since August 3rd. "I've placed phone calls to Chapin Rose's office, to the bureau chief at IDOT, to try to get things moving," Tribum said. She was cautiously optimistic that payment would be received soon, saying the holdup is not on approval, but in the Illinois Comptroller's office issuing the check. "That process has been delayed, with employees working more from home," she said. Longtime employee retiring. County Transportation Engineer Eric Sebring told the board that engineering technician Malia Fombell is retiring from the county on December 5th. Malia was hired by Roger Hooper in December of 1984, and since that time has worked for four other county engineers. During her 37 years of employment, Malia has worked tirelessly to improve the transportation system for the citizens of Piatt County, said Sebring. "Malia is one of the best technicians I've ever had work for me, and I am proud to call her my co-worker," he added. In other action, the board approved another resolution for the Allerton Road construction. Even though the project is complete, County Highway Transportation Engineer Eric Sebring said the paperwork will allow the county to use $240,000 in Rebuild Illinois funds towards the $1.5 million project. Approved a resolution allowing county employees to carry over the current year's vacation time into 2020-21. Heard from Piatt County Mental Health Director Tony Kirkman that a 988 suicide hotline number has been approved nationally and should be in place by next June. He also said that his employees are now eligible for student loan paybacks since the county is considered underserved in the area of mental health services. Heard Kirkman thank County Board member Renee Freund for her work on the Mental Health Board. "It was Freund's last meeting before a new board is seated in December. We're sad to see you go," commented Kirkman. Was given an update by Ryan Miller regarding an ongoing opioid settlement that's being negotiated with major pharmacy companies. In 2017, the County Board voted to join other counties in filing lawsuits separately. The intent is to get settlement dollars to counties directly, instead of them being awarded to the state. And heard from Piatt County Nursing Home Director Scott Porter that staffing is beginning to become an issue at the nursing home. Despite that, he added that employees are trying to gear up for the holidays to make it special for residents there. Obituaries. Pearl M. Crawford, 95 of Monticello, entered into the loving arms of Jesus on November 10th at Carl Hospital, Urbana. A private family service will be held and interment in Monticello Township Cemetery. Memorials may be made to Kirby Medical Center or Arbor Rose. Jeffrey Jerome Topel, 70 of Monticello, passed away November 10th at Danville VA Hospital, Danville. Private family services will be held in Danville National Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Piatt County Animal Shelter, Monticello, or an organization of the donor's choice. Stephen C. Long, 70, of Whiteheath, passed away suddenly on November 9th at his residence. In light of the pandemic, private graveside family services will be held. Memorials can be made to the Wounded Warrior Project. Christmas on the Hill, live nativity canceled. November 17th. 19-year straight run for Christmas on the Hill in Cerro Gordo will end, as the town's American Legion Auxiliary has announced it will not be held due to COVID-19 concerns. This year, the COVID virus has presented the organization with much more to consider. After much deliberation and not being able to safely have the activity, the decision was made to cancel it for this year, said Auxiliary member Suzanne Shambaugh. In previous years, Christmas on the Hill has been held on the first Saturday of December. The Auxiliary hopes to resume the tradition in December of 2021. Christ Lutheran Live Nativity canceled. Christ Lutheran Church in Monticello on Old Route 47 has announced it will not host the annual live nativity display, which had been scheduled for December 5th. The current COVID-19 environment precludes the church from being able to put on an event and assure the safety of participants and attendees. Church leaders said they appreciate everyone who has attended in past years and hope to resume the live nativity in December of 2021. Monticello Schools Going All Remote Until December 7th by Steve Hoffman, November 17th. A rising number of COVID-19 cases in Monticello has prompted the school district to shift to remote learning for all students between November 18th and December 4th. School officials hope to reopen school buildings for a resumption of in-person instruction on Monday, December 7th. School Superintendent Vic Zimmerman said a major factor in the decision was the stress on school staff, who are teaching both in-person and remote learners. With 19 cases of COVID-19 among students and staff since October 30th, that has boosted the total of online-only students from 14% of the student population to about 34%, since close contacts are also required to quarantine at home. Our teachers are managing three different learning plans when we add in the temporary remote students, said Zimmerman in an email to parents on Tuesday. This overstretches teachers. He added that the 19 cases originated outside of the school walls. Frankly, some poor adult decisions outside of school are causing this school closure to occur. I get that we are all COVID wary and we want to live our lives, but we cannot have our cake and eat it too. Following all safety measures inside of school for 25 hours per week, then attending non-family social gatherings, playing travel ball, and ignoring safety guidelines for the other 143 hours a week will not work, said Zimmerman. He encouraged district families to follow health safety guidelines as the Thanksgiving holiday approaches to limit the spread of coronavirus. Piatt County saw its greatest number of new cases last week since the pandemic began, recording 139 in a five-day period between November 10th and 14th. A total of 47 of those were among Monticello residents. Wednesday will be a remote learning transition day for Monticello students and staff, with no live instruction, but lessons posted on Google and Seesaw platforms. Formal online instruction will begin Thursday and continue through Friday, December 4th. Information on meal distribution was mailed to parents on Wednesday. There will also be no access to the Kirby Medical Center rapid COVID test while the district is on remote learning, Zimmerman said. School staff and students should instead contact their medical provider or go to a public testing facility if they need to be tested. I understand the potential hardship that going 100% remote will put on some of our families due to parent work schedules, he added. Now is a great time to again come together as a community and help a neighbor or friend out. Zimmerman applauded students in the district for adhering to safety protocols. Our in-school students wear their masks and follow safety guidelines to the greatest extent possible. And our at-home students are keeping pace as well as they can in a difficult situation. I'm also incredibly proud of our faculty and staff members who are teaching our students, taking temperatures in the office, cleaning our buildings, and making daily meals, he said. This year is like no other school year before, and we have asked all of our employees to work in different ways. They all deserve a gold medal. COVID Q&A, Close Contacts and Tracing, November 17th. In cooperation with local health and school officials, the Journal Republican is presenting Q&As on issues surrounding the COVID-19 outbreak. We will be posting them online throughout the week and also in our weekly print edition. COVID Q&A, David Remmert, DeWitt Piatt Bi-County Health Department Administrator. Question. About contact tracing. Some individuals will have received new diagnoses, and then no one will call close contacts immediately. Why not? David Remmert. We have uncovered a lag in the reporting of cases from testing sites area providers. We cannot begin contact tracing until we have a case report in our system. The situation has been brought to our attention from patients who received a diagnosis and then notify us that they tested positive and the case report isn't found. The worst case scenario thus far has been that we won't receive the case report until 5 days later. Question: if a person is diagnosed positive, what defines a close contact? We had a case with an employee at the courthouse, so why wasn't the courthouse closed down? Remmer: a close contact is someone who was exposed to a case and was within 6 feet of that case for a cumulative duration of 15 minutes or longer. Just because other staff were at the courthouse doesn't mean they have all been exposed. For many workers, they're never within 6 feet and may only pass one another in a hallway. That would technically not meet that definition. While surfaces may theoretically be a vehicle for the virus, the CDC has noted that this is not how the virus is known to transmit. It passes from person to person. Featured: Allerton in Residence Program Set to Launch, by Steve Hoffman, November 17th. Allerton Park and Retreat Center's in-residence program will take flight this winter as the Monticello Park hosts Chicago-based multimedia artist, educator, and University of Illinois alumnus John E. Bannon. The in-residence program offers artists and naturalists the opportunity to live and create at the Allerton Estate. The program will not only support and highlight the meaningful work of creators and researchers, but bring awareness to the unique characteristics of the park and continue the legacy of Robert Allerton, who often hosted great thinkers and makers at his home. Besides creating while on site, the resident will host a program that involves the public in their work and process, as well as donate a work intended to further engage visitors once their residency is done. Longtime Allerton users and supporters Joan and Peter Hood donated an endowment which will provide yearly funds to be used for the resident's stipend and some staff support, and Central Illinois natives David Brem and Larry Bauman supported the renovation of Robert Allerton's ice house, which will serve as lodging for the resident. More information about Bannon is available at http://www.johnebannon.com. Well, that's all we have time for today. This has been Paula Kaufman reading the Journal Republican with stories from November 12th through November 18th, 2020. Please stay well. I look forward to reading with you again soon.